Hello everyone, this is Kim C, and you're listening to The Year of Underrated Stephen King. This is a literary book podcast where one university fiction teacher makes her way through the underrated works of Stephen King, and also some of the television adaptations. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening in and being with me today. We have a little bit of a fun episode where we are going to talk some Stephen King television. I don't typically do this very often, unless, of course, it is an underrated work that has been adapted, and there's a lot of excitement about it. For example, this year's Lisey Story. I had a lot of thoughts on that one, but I don't really talk TV too much. However, I really wanted to talk about this one with you before I get back to the third book in the Dark Tower series. Yes, folks, I have rejoined Roland and the gang, and I have now begun The Wasteland. So, something to look forward to in the next couple weeks. I am very, very much at the very beginning. I'm excited to be back with Roland and everybody. So, The Wasteland is coming up. However, I did want to take some time to discuss Mr. Mercedes Season 3. For those of you who have been tuning in these last couple weeks, I was working on The Green Mile, week by week, chipping away at all six parts of that glorious novel. And to my surprise, I was able to squeeze in the third season of Mr. Mercedes. So this show was formerly featured on the AT&T Audience Network, and it is now streaming on the Peacock Network here in the States, which I believe is an NBC affiliate, so that's where you can check it out. At the very beginning of the podcast, many moons ago, when we were bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and absolutely clueless, I did include a few thoughts on Mr. Mercedes Season 1 and 2. I don't think I did that extensive of a job. I think it was kind of like a little bit of a hodgepodge investigation there. In retrospect, I think I would have taken my time looking at that those seasons of the show. But I think at that time, I wasn't really in a place to critique television. I wanted books only in those very, very early days. However, before we move on to our regularly scheduled literary analysis of the underrated Stephen King works, before we super duper dive in with The Wastelands, I really just wanted to talk about Season 3 with everybody, and also shed some thoughts in regards to the Bill Hodges trilogy. So that's what this episode is predominantly going to be about. We're going to talk a little bit about the three-book series featuring retired detective Bill Hodges that came out in 2014, 15, and 16. We're going to take a look at those a little bit, specifically the second novel. And then we're going to talk about this season three of Mr. Mercedes, because I need to get some things off my chest with everybody. So that is going to be the majority of this episode, how it's broken down. There's going to be some spoilers, so I much prefer if you would like to remain spoiler-free. Definitely make sure you are all caught up on your Mr. Mercedes viewing. However, if you've read the book, you should be in good shape. So let's dive in. We're going to talk Mr. Mercedes for a little bit. I don't know if I have the Bill Hodges trilogy high up on my list to read at this point. I think it's a little bit further down, and we'll kind of talk about that. But to kind of recap on the show itself, Mr. Mercedes is a 2019 release starring Irish actor Brendan Gleeson as retired detective Bill Hodges. He is the star of the show. Our main character, Of the Bill Hodges trilogy. He is the guy. And once more, the Bill Hodges trilogy comprises three novels. The first novel, Mr. Mercedes, was the 2014 release. The second novel, Finders Keepers, was released in 2015. And the final story, End of Watch, followed in 2016. So 14, 15, 16 was a time when Mr. King had his crime fiction hat on. This is where readers first meet Holly Gibney, who is a real big deal these days, guys. And I believe the next Stephen King output is going to be, according to Wikipedia, so take it with a grain of salt, but it is rumored that it is an untitled Holly Gibney project. So if you're interested in the character of Holly Gibney and the roots of her appearance on the scene and kind of how she started out and how perhaps she is now King's darling, definitely pick up the Mr. Mercedes trilogy to kind of observe how Holly Gibney came onto the scene. But this series, this television series, has taken major liberties with the story. More on that later. But what's interesting about Mr. Mercedes is seasons 1 and 2 of the show have sandwiched the first and third novels, which is very interesting. It does work because the first and third novels have the exact same villain. That villain's name is Brady Hartsfield. He is gross. He is definitely an irredeemable King villain. There's a couple of those we've talked about on the show thus far. We've got a Norman Daniels from 1995's Rose Matter. We have a Big Jim Rennie from 2009's Under the Dome. I would even throw Miss Wilkes in there. I think she's pretty irredeemable, but yeah, Brady Hartsfield, absolutely irredeemable. But what's very interesting in the show is the second novel of the Bill Hodges trilogy, Finders Keepers, is the source of inspiration for the final season. Hopefully the final season. So the third season, hopefully the final season. You did hear that right, folks. I'm revealing a lot perhaps too soon. However, what we will discover in this episode is that your hostess doesn't have too many positive things to say about the third season. I really don't. I wasn't a big fan, but more on that in a little bit. So before I start talking about the nitty-gritty of the show, I do want to talk about the novel for a quick second, because that second book, Finders Keepers, there's something more. There's something interesting. There's some good stuff in that one, guys. So when I look at the Bill Hodges trilogy, hopefully you guys have all read it, it is definitely a little bit underrated, a little unexplored. I really, as I kind of mentioned previously, I don't know if I plan on covering it on the show anytime soon. There's a lot more bigger fish I'd like to fry up in terms of King titles. It's a little low on the desire for a reread, except for the second novel, which is the one we're going to talk about right now. I might have to make some room for the second novel, Finders Keepers, because I really, really like that one. I really do. Overall, I think when I look at the Bill Hodges trilogy in general, I'm not sure if a lot of constant readers love these books. It's a different direction for King, and it's also a different direction for King readers. Of course, there are very familiar morsels peppered throughout, but it's definitely something to explore that this second decade of the 2000s is where Stephen King kind of puts on his crime fiction hat, and we get this Bill Hodges trilogy, which I believe, unless I'm mistaken, this might be one of the first episodic installment characters that King has had. I know that throughout his work we have mention of other characters, we have hints at other stories, especially locations. That one's pretty cool. But I don't know about distinguished characters popping up here and there. I know in 11/22/63 we have an awesome cameo from Beverly and Richie from It. So I know we get some fun cameos, but I believe the Bill Hodges trilogy is kind of this first recurring character with different episodes. But the trilogy itself is very heavy on the cat and mouse, the cops, bad guys. This is kind of the start of this new sort of King style, which after the trilogy, we have 2018's The Outsider, which I do believe is a stronger output than the Bill Hodges trilogy. However, and kind of what we're going to explore a little bit today, is there's something golden about book two, Finders Keepers, that I really, really liked. And it is one that I've noticed a lot of constant readers have a little bit more to say. There's a little bit more there. So overall, Finders Keepers for me shines brighter and stands out from the first and third. And I'm wondering if it's because it leaned a little closer to some of the wonderful King characters and subject matters his readers are familiar with. But also, I think the whole thing just has a bit more heart. And the premise is also very, very intriguing. Kind of jumping back to Mr. Mercedes, we have a really despicable, irredeemable bad guy, Mr. Brady Hartsfield. He is a mass murderer. He also has a kind of creepy, gross Oedipus thing going on with his mother. It's overall incredibly icky. And King also gives him the point of view, the direct point of view, which is horrible. He's a despicable human being once more. I just can't reiterate that enough. He's gross, he's foul, he's offensive. But it definitely clashes with the White Knight, who is this kind of cranky old cop named Bill. The reader ends up really cheering quite loudly for him and his team to put the clues together and catch Brady, the bad guys. So some traditional sort of cops, bad guys stuff going on with there. But then we get Finders Keepers, which is a really unique little bird. We've got, in this novel, a really cool opening segment where best-selling novelist and recluse John Rothstein is murdered in cold blood by a, in quotes, fan named Morris Bellamy, who was upset by Rothstein because of his narrative decisions with the star character Jimmy Gold. So the character of John Rothstein is supposedly a mix of authors John Updike, Philip Roth, and J.D. Salinger. And Jimmy Gold, from what I recall in the novel, is very much like a kind of Holden Caulfield from Catcher in the Rye. He's that kind of protagonist that's wild and free, and or wanting to be free. Someone who channels Kerouac or Kurt Vonnegut. Jimmy Gold is the kind of guy who says, screw you, establishment, I want to be free, I want the open road, I want my life in all its complexities and mysteries, and I don't want to be a sheep, I don't want a 9-to-5 job and a wife and two kids, I just want rebellion. And I might be a little bit of a depressed brat about it, but at the same time, I want what I want, unapologetically so. And some these days may call it entitled white man syndrome, others might call it nonconformity, or those who might identify closer to it might observe it as just being a free spirit. It depends on the reader, but that's Jimmy Gold. And his fate at the end of the fictional Runner trilogy, the Runner trilogy is John Rothstein's greatest work, really pissed off mega fan Morris Bellamy. And in the Finders Keepers novel, the year 1978, Morris is a petty criminal, and he decides that he would not only ask his favorite writer what the hell was up with his narrative decisions, but he also wanted to pay Rothstein a visit because it was rumored that Rothstein, He hadn't written anything in years and years and years, but he had at least two novels he had composed but not published. And basically, the fate of Jimmy Gold might be changed, and kind of like Dickens' infamous Scrooge character, he could change, and Jimmy Gold's path would be different, and Morris Bellamy was so hellbent on knowing if it was real, if knowing that he might be the only person to know the truth about his favorite character, because he was absolutely consumed with him. He was absolutely consumed with the life and story of Jimmy Gold, and he had to know. He absolutely had to know if it was real, if Jimmy Gold's fate was different. So, taking a page out of all mentally disturbed, obsessed fans, the deep space cowboy, as we had with Jim Dooley from 2006's Lisi story, I believe the term deep space cowboy wasn't used in the novel, I don't think, but it was used in the show, and it really worked. What does Morris Bellamy do to his favorite author, dear listeners? Can you give it a guess? Spoiler alert, he shoots him dead. That sounds about right. That's what they do. So, you know, his favorite writer can never write again. How perfect. But after he murders Joan Rothstein, Morris is strangely caught for another crime. I forget what it was at this point in time. But regardless, he is caught and he is in prison for the next 35 years. But before he was sent to the clink for the long haul, Morris did get his hands on the Rothstein notebooks. They did exist. They were real. He also got his hands on a lot of cash and buried the notebooks and the cash near his childhood home. It's in a kind of rural area. I believe it's in the Midwest. And it's there for a good 3 decades until it's found in present day by a young teenager named Pete Saubers. He's never ever heard of John Rothstein, but he discovers the notebook, opens everything up, definitely uses the cash to help his father, who was a victim from the Mr. Mercedes massacre, where our old bad guy Brady Hartsfield killed a bunch of people by mowing them down with a Mercedes, which is how novel 1, Mr. Mercedes, opens. So it's kind of a nice connection to the previous story. But Peter spends the cash as covertly as any teenager can, and he starts reading John Rothstein, getting his hands on everything that he published. Meanwhile, Morris Bellamy gets out of prison. He's still in relatively decent shape and not super old. And I believe he paroles out. I definitely need to give it a reread, but he wants his stuff back because he really doesn't have anything else going for him, and he wants to read those notebooks as he never got a chance to. So, as you can detect, as we get a little bit further into Finders Keepers, I should let you know that I only read the novel once, pretty much right when it came out. Or rather, I believe I rented this one from the library when my public library got its own copy. So, I don't think I purchased this book, which seems odd to me, but it was 2015, and I had only really been loving King for a short time, and I think my own level of fandom hadn't yet peaked, but I only read it once. And I remember really loving the subject matter. The premise was so engaging, and it's a very interesting structure to this story because we go for a really long time with Morris and with this new guy Pete and this case of notebooks and cash, and you don't really hear about Bill Hodges or Holly Gibney or Jerome Robinson or anything from the cast of characters we got to know in Mr. Mercedes. We don't hear about them for a really long time. I want to say almost halfway in, or at least a good third into the novel. And then we find out they've opened up a private investigation service called, cutest name ever, Finders Keepers. But yeah, they don't really pop into the story until about halfway through. And this was incredibly interesting because you were able to really be a fly on the wall to the dramatic irony happening in this book where the reader knows everything that's going on. We know about the hidden suitcase. We know that Morris Bellamy is the real murderer of John Rothstein because his killer is never caught or it's never identified as Morris. We know what Peter Sobers is up to, and it's really, really strong, and I definitely think it's the strongest book in the trilogy. I think I might have said that a couple times by now, but yeah, so that's sort of the background information on the Finders Keepers novel, and show creators took this second book and made it the third season. So in our next section, we're going to talk about maybe how that didn't really land so well. I am such a fan of Finders Keepers, but I don't feel it was executed very well in this third season. So we're going to talk about the decisions that were made, the areas that I liked, the areas I really don't like, and whether or not I think it's worth giving a watch. So once more, if you would like to take your time and work on season 3 of Mr. Mercedes, highly recommended. I don't want to spoil anything for you. But if you have read Finders Keepers, you'll be okay to proceed, I believe. Yeah, hopefully I won't ruin anything for you there. But this is definitely a show to check out, the first and second seasons, but we'll talk more about how I feel about season 3 in the next section. So let's get to it. I'll see you there. Everybody, thanks for hanging out with me as we discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly within 2019's Mr. Mercedes Season 3. I think I may have made a bit of a faux pas in the last section. Mr. Mercedes premiered in 2017 as a television series, but Season 3 was 2019. I think I might have fudged that. But we're going to take a look at what I enjoyed about Season 3 and what I definitely did not enjoy, as well as some more tie-ins to the really awesome book, the 2015 novel that I really, really enjoyed. But let's kind of dive in with what I've always loved about Mr. Mercedes, the television series, and what I continue to love in season 3, and that is the cast. The cast is spectacular, dear ones, and I highly recommend, if you haven't yet checked out Mr. Mercedes, to give it a go. You can totally go in. I think, and this is a little bit scandalous, I don't think you need to have read the book. You'll, of course, enjoy it much, much more. But there are a lot of script additions and subtractions to the main plot of the story. They stick with it pretty strongly for the first and second season, but boy, did we take some serious nosedives with the third. However, I think the Mr. Mercedes trilogy for me is a very jaunty, I hesitate to use the expression lighthearted. It's not lighthearted, but it's digestible in a crime fiction kind of way, where we don't spend as much time with the characters because they're moving to and fro. We are much more involved in the criminal case and the depraved, cerebral funhouse that is the disgusting Brady Hartsfield. But I think I highly recommend giving this show a watch, whether you've read Mr. Mercedes or not, simply to indulge in some tremendous actor portrayals, one of them being the star of the show, Irish actor Brendan Gleeson. I love, love, love him so much. If you're a Harry Potter fan out there, he is Professor Mad-Eye Moody in Goblet of Fire, I believe. I love this actor so much. and they let him keep his Irish accent. It totally works. It's delightful and charming, and he's cantankerous and cranky, but yet we see some really wonderful, sweet parts about him that the show does a great job of portraying, such as he is a turtle owner, and I don't know if it's a desert tortoise, but he's got a very big tortoise in his backyard. I think his name is Frank, and he feeds him just hunks of lettuce and vegetables, and he just like sits sort of with a giant frown on his face watching the turtle eat his vegetables. It's pretty precious. We also have a character who does not exist in the Mr. Mercedes novels, but she's amazing, and that's next door neighbor Ida Silver. She is played by actress Holland Taylor, who I totally love. I love this lady so much. She's been around forever. She's tremendous, and her character is cheeky and charming and delightful, and she has a lot of heart. I don't remember if it's in season one or season two, but one of my favorite Ida moments is she kind of has a crush on Bill, and I think they must have been next door neighbors to each other for a really long time, and they're both in a certain stage of life, and she knocks on his door and kind of barges in and gives him a Polaroid of herself completely naked and just says, "I just want you to know that I'm really hot and I'm awesome, and you should know that, and yeah, we should maybe date or sleep together or something." It's amazing. It's just, I love it so much. Ida Silver, she's also in season three reprising her role as the next door neighbor, who is also a grade school, it's either grade school or high school, English teacher, which does come into the story quite a bit. They managed to weave her in there really well. I love the depiction of the Finders Keepers group. We've got Jarell Jerome, who portrays a little bit of a Harvard dropout. He's not a Harvard dropout in the novels, but Jerome Robinson, who really sort of blooms on the page. He's a teen who mows Bill Hodge's lawn, and Bill kind of is really close with his family and kind of looks out for him, and we kind of see Jerome grow up through the Mr. Mercedes trilogy, and he kind of really enjoys helping out Finders Keepers. And then we have a really solid Holly Gibney performance by actress Justine Loop. So I'm a huge fan of Cynthia Erivo's performance of Holly Gibney in 2019's The Outsider on HBO. That was a limited series that rocked my world, guys. Oh, it was so good. Oh my god. If you are a fan of The Wire, one of the main Wire writers, Richard, I'm forgetting his last name, starts with a P, he wrote the show, and it's fire. He takes the coolness of the novel, the police procedural elements of the novel, as well as the Stephen King unexpected, mysterious, frightening, and sandwiches them together so, so well. But Cynthia Erivo's depiction of Holly Gibney is my favorite. That's a wow performance. However, if you do jump over here to seasons 1 through 3 of Mr. Mercedes, we definitely get a really good performance. I give Justine Loop 2 thumbs up. She's taking her Holly Gibney in a little bit of an understated way, where she's really neurotic at first, and then we kind of see her relax a little bit. She lets her hair down quite literally and becomes more herself and really finds a lot of purpose taking care of Bill in a way, or helping him stay the sharp detective that she knows he still wants to be inside. They are also all heavily wound up in Brady Hartsfield. So Justine Loop is great. And if you are a Holly Gibney fan, which I think a lot of us are kind of forced to either jump on the train or get off concerning the character of Holly Gibney, I recommend checking out Mr. Mercedes and her performance, Justine Loop. I think it's good. Cynthia Erivo's is great, but Justine Loop's is very good. And we have an upcoming untitled Holly Gibney novel coming up here shortly, probably next year. So the more Holly Gibney digestion we can get in as constant readers, the better. So keep your eyes peeled for that one, but definitely check out this performance of Holly Gibney. It's good. I like it. So I've just listed a bunch of characters and actors who I think did an amazing job. I love them so, so much. We also have some characters in that aren't in the novels at all that really contribute a lot to the story. My favorites, one of them is Lou Linkletter, and she is a co-worker of Brady Hartsfield's in season one. This character really undergoes quite a bit of drama. And we kind of work with her a lot in season three, but I love Lou Linkletter. She's similar to Ida in terms of they don't exist in the story, but they definitely quickly latch on to the heart of the viewer in the show, which I really enjoy. So the actors, the performances, I really like about Mr. Mercedes overall. You should check it out if you want to see some good performances. Having said that, now let us shift gears a little bit to what I really don't like about season three, because I just listed all of these actors who I love and the performances that really move me and get me excited about the Bill Hodges trilogy coming to life. And yet in season three, I felt we had a lot of strikeouts in terms of characters and the right actors for the role. Number one, the actor I wasn't super crazy about that I really feel was miscast is, of course, Gabriel Ebert, who plays Morris Bellamy. So the show decided to take a very strong opposite direction from the novel and make Morris Bellamy stay young. So after he murders John Rothstein, there isn't a significant chunk of time that passes. It's about a few weeks. So Morris Bellamy looks like he's a guy in his 30s. I don't know if maybe they just didn't really explain to Mr. Ebert like who this guy is or what Morris Bellamy is all about, but his performance I feel is a bit overdone. It's a little bit all over the place. He's really manic. It doesn't make any sense. So we have another character I'm going to talk about here in just a second, but Morris Bellamy has a girlfriend. This is not a thing in the book. He's actively cheating on her with a much older woman. More on her in a little bit. He also is not it's not portrayed in the show. This guy looks like he's never read a book in his life, let alone become obsessed with John Rothstein. I'm just not getting the disturbed, obsessed kind of fan that we see a lot in King works. You know, we have the really bombastic, over-the-top, incredibly frightening Annie Wilkes from Misery. And then if you guys checked out 2006's Lisi story, the most recent one that comes to mind, of course, is rabid fan Jim Dooley, who is kind of just this like loner guy, quiet, overly observant, says very strange things, but when it comes to his favorite author, he just can't shut up and actually becomes very intense and frightening and just disturbed. We see that a lot in King's work, of course. It's a repeating trope. Morris Bellamy in the novel is awesome, and we really understand why he's such a nut job, why he's super obsessed with John Rothstein. You know, Morris Bellamy, this portrayal of Gabriel Ebert, it's not working for me, guys. It's overly wrought. It's overly done. It doesn't make sense. You don't get a clear indication of what he cares about other than himself. He's incredibly narcissistic. It's like, okay, I don't believe that you're obsessed with books at all. I don't. this isn't coming across as cohesive at all. The second miscasting, I believe, is the lady known as Alma. What is her last name? It's Alma Lane, and she's portrayed by actress Kate Mulgrew. If you are a fan of the Netflix series Orange is the New Black, she plays Red, who's quite a force of nature. I love the actress Kate Mulgrew. She does really well in the show. However, her character steals the show in a bad way. Alma's insane, and she used to sleep with John Rothstein, because apparently what we come to find out is John Rothstein was a bit of a cad and was a bit of a dirty old man, or dirty man in general, and had a lot of female fans who he slept with, or intellectual women who he just had slept with, and one of them was Ida and the other was Alma. And this guy has quite a trail of broken hearts. And Alma is somebody who, I guess, got her heart broken by John Rothstein and had this relationship with a young Morris Bellamy, to which it is statutory rape, it sounds like, which is very uncomfortable. She starts sleeping with Morris when it's not demonstrated, thank God. It's nothing flashbacks. Almost every single scene that you see Morris Bellamy as an adult in with Alma, they're having sex. It's gratuitous. It's not necessary. You get it, okay, that they have this very kind of sick, codependent, very toxic bond between each other, and it's an obsession with John Rothstein that's fueling it. And we find out that this character of Alma has influenced Morris Bellamy to find the lost notebooks of John Rothstein and murder him in the process. So they really took a lot of liberties with the novel, and it's not really working. Alma steals the show. She kind of, we see her do, well, she basically starts killing people, and you never really knew that that was part of her character. It just, the viewer has to digest it, and you just have to just go with it. You're like, okay, this makes no sense. There's no reason why you should be doing this, but I guess you're doing it now, and it just seems very haphazard. It's not thought out well. She's random. So she starts killing people, and the viewer knows everybody she's killed, and Morris and other people in the story do not, and she's portraying herself as just the wilting flower, like, I just want what's best for you, and I just want to celebrate the art, and we have to let the world know what a genius Rothstein was, if the price is right, of course. So, Kate Mulgrew, she's a terrific actress. She is fun in this show. Like, it's hard to not like her, but she's nuts, and her character doesn't fit at all. Her bond with Morris Bellamy isn't believable at all. I don't understand it. They also give Morris a girlfriend, as I mentioned. That doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. This poor woman is... There are so many poor writing choices with the script. The last character, who I just cannot get on board with, nothing against his performance, just the way it was explained to him, I believe, is the young actor who plays Pete Sobers. He is, I'm probably pronouncing this incorrect, Ramian Newton. It's either Ramian or Rarmian, but he's an Aussie, so I don't know if they're pronouncing that R. So Ramian Newton, and he is a very good-looking guy, right? And I'm saying this because there's a scene in the show where he's being chased down by bullies, and they have no reason to bully him. Like, he has no reason that he should be bullied at all. There's nothing odd looking about him. He doesn't have a stutter. He's not an awkward person. Like, this guy is from a modeling catalog. Like, this guy is so handsome, and no, I'm sorry, like, we're not stupid. Why would he be bullied? No, there's nothing wrong with Pete Sauvers. He's an average, well-adjusted American teenager, and the actor they have portraying him is incredibly handsome, with no sort of, there's no aspect that's demonstrated to the viewer to indicate that he should be ostracized or picked on in any way. Not that that's always the case. That's not always the case that there has to be something physically evident for someone to get picked on. Of course not. However, I mean, in a show, you have to remember that everything has to be shown to the audience. It's what you show on film. It's what's put in front of our eyes that counts. We have no indication of why he's being bullied. The only thing I think that's there is Pete is spending the cash and he buys himself some expensive Air Jordans, I believe. So I think that other than envy from his classmates, you know, that would be the only reason. But also, he was bigger than they were. So when it came to like a physical confrontation, he would have kicked their butt. So it's like, this is so eye roll. I just had so many problems with the writer decisions for this season's script. I was like, this is taking me out of the story. I don't believe this. I don't believe these people. I don't believe these characters. And you've taken the names of the people in the book, but you've just wrecked it. You've made it all wrong. These people would not do these things. And if they are doing these things, why aren't you, as the show creators, explaining that to us? You know, why is Pete getting picked on? There's no good reason. Why is Morris in a toxic sexual bond with a woman that's 30 years older than him? Why does he like John Rothstein? What is it about John Rothstein's work makes him obsessive and locked in this death deal where he's now a murderer and you know, hunting down this young teenage boy and his family in order to find the Rothstein notebooks and the cash? It just, there's nothing is explained well. So that area that we're talking about right now, to kind of recap, those are the casting choices I did not like. We began this investigation with the casting that I do like, and why it's one of the reasons that it's one of the strongest areas of season 3 and the entire show. But in season 3 itself, we also have some terrible casting choices. The second thing I want to talk about is, or the second criticism I have for season 3 is, of course, the terrible writing decisions regarding Lou Linkletter and her bond with Brady Hartsfield. This was so poorly done, folks. So in order to fully kind of embrace what went down, I'm going to have to spoil a little bit of seasons 1 and 2, but I'll do my best to not make it super duper blatant. So Brady Hartsfield is the Mercedes killer. You find this out right away as the show begins. But on paper, he leads a kind of odd life where he works at a computer store, or rather a little tech shop, and he also has a side job as an ice cream man. Then he has a creepy secret lair inside of the home he shares with his mother. They also have a very inappropriate relationship together. But Brady Hartsfield kind of has a soft spot for Lou Linkletter. Granted, he's a sociopath, so as soft as a spot as a sociopath can have. But I think he doesn't despise Lou, and Lou thinks they're good friends. But clearly, toward the end, that's not the case, because he causes a great deal of bodily harm for Lou, where she almost dies. And it's pretty terrible. I also don't know if Lou is a they. I think she might be non-binary in the show. Uncertain. I'm not sure. So if they are, forgive me of my pronoun lapse. But Lou is almost killed. It's terrible. So in season two, we kind of see her, putting their lives back together. And then in season three, all the progress that they made, they lost. And that's all I'll say there. They are also at the mercy of Brady, despite the fact that Brady is no longer in the show. And what I mean by at the mercy of is, like, mentally haunted. The thing is this is the perfect example of fiction 101 that the show fails about: showing versus telling. Every time the viewer meets with Lou Linkletter in season three, she's telling the viewer, "I think about Brady," or "Brady's voice is in my mind and it makes me do things. It makes me think things." It doesn't show that. What it does show is too little too late. We'll see a couple visual indications of madness, such as a hallucinating ice cream truck, like a little toy ice cream truck. Or when she's walking into a room, there's the silhouette of Brady Hartsfield as the ice cream man. Clearly what happened is obviously actor Harry Treadaway, who portrayed Brady Hartsfield, was not going to be featured in season three. This was a foolish move. However, who knows what happens behind the scenes in terms of contract stuff or other film obligations, or maybe they were just over it. They didn't want to be on the show anymore. Totally understandable. However, like, at least do some sort of voiceover. It doesn't have to be the exact actor's voice, but something. Don't tell the audience what you should be showing them. That is the very first section I teach beginning fiction students, everyone. We go over how in your stories, in their stories, you must show rather than tell. And this show absolutely commits the first crime in fiction, is too much telling and not enough showing. And that's all we get with Lou throughout season three, is talking about Brady's speaking to me again. And so in regards to the character of Lou, at the very end, she has a job as an ice cream man. And the viewer is left to assume and digest that she is becoming a new Brady Hartsfield. Like, Brady is haunting her in a way that the audience never got to see or observe, or barely did, rather, and that they're going to be the new Brady Hartsfield. And it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It's eye roll is what it is, because we never saw it for ourselves. We didn't have the presence of Brady there carrying over the way it needed to in order for Lou's proclamations to be legitimate to the audience. It's just so poorly executed, dear friends. It's not believable. I had a lot of problems with it. So by the time we get to the end and the audience is observing Lou in this new profession, we're supposed to be concerned. We're supposed to be frightened. But I didn't feel anything, because I didn't get to register or resonate that Brady was very real to the character of Lou. That wasn't indicated. It just wasn't. So I feel like that was poorly done. Poor choices with that storyline. It needed some work. I understand if you didn't have the main actor of Harry Treadaway, but figure it out. Figure it out. Either with a voiceover, you could have done something where you got Harry Treadaway's voice, or a guy who sounds kind of like him. You could do flashbacks from other seasons. Something could have been done. So it just didn't work, guys. Poor choices. Overall, really strange telling rather than showing. And it was really hard to bounce back. The second, I believe, the third criticism I have is, of course, the lack of story consistency. We really went off the rails. We completely neglected this beautiful book that was Finders Keepers. It lost a lot of heart. Once more, we're returning back to Morris Bellamy. This is definitely his story. Morris Bellamy, even though he is a villain, it's his story of obsession and connection. And when he was on the screen, dear friends, I didn't want to watch the show. I was so not into his story, and I found him kind of terrible, even though Morris Bellamy as a character kind of is. At least in Finders Keepers, the novel, there was a lot of intrigue. There was a kind of quiet curiosity there, as there are typically with readers, right? Readers oftentimes are deep thinkers. They are quiet. They are the person in the corner kind of staring off, and we're curious about them. Especially somebody like Morris, who has done terrible things, but yet there's something more there. There's this deep love of literature, in a way, and this one man's work. There's a devotion there to these words that becomes obsession. And so it's Morris's story, and yet Morris sucks, guys. The actor portrayal, God bless him, but the character depiction of Morris is so irritating, dear friends. He's irritating. It's poorly done. I can't blame the actor I can't blame the actor so much because they're only doing what the directing and writing body are sort of instructing them to do, and kind of letting them go for it. And so I really feel those who wrote the show, I don't know if there was a nice digestion of Morris's character. I really want to know why they kept it present day. I think, like, why did you do that? You know, like, one of the most enjoyable parts about Finders Keepers is that Morris has a long stretch of time where he is in jail and learns a lot, ages, comes out. It's interesting. It's what makes the story stronger than the other Mr. Mercedes or the Bill Hodges output. So I'm really upset. I'm upset by their creative choices. You kept it present day. You invented this character, Alma Lane, who just is a source of gratuitous sexual exploits, as well as somewhat comedic relief, although it's very, like, disturbing black comedy, like some black comedic relief moments featuring I have so many problems with season 3. It's difficult to articulate. Like, I find myself just kind of flubbing over words because I'm just shaking my head, very upset. I'm very upset at their creative choices. Finders Keepers is such a strong novel. It's engaging. We have the passing of time, we have great character development, and we have this premise of writerly, you know, fame and obsession with the art that's not your own, or obsession to a story and to a character, and it doesn't belong to that person, but they kill for it. And it's about obsession and all kinds of madness. And there are some huge, deep, cool, revealing, dynamic, suspenseful concepts inside of Finders Keepers. And boy, did they just pop the balloon. They popped the balloon on the novel and made a show out of the deflated balloon chunks. They really did. So season three for me, folks, as I kind of wrap up, because I could continue with more criticisms, but it would kind of just be a rehashing of all the things I don't like. Basically, the poor script, poor casting choices, too much telling and not enough showing. Those are the big ones. The only positives I have for season three is, of course, they kept the main actors. The setting is also very good. I really enjoy the setting. I believe it takes place in Ohio, and it works. The setting was lovely. Some of the additional characters, lovely. Mr. Finkelstein, who is a lawyer who assists with Holly Gibney. They also have a little bit of romance together. He's delightful. Ida Silver's a delight. Alma Lane is not. Morris Bellamy's girlfriend is just absolutely flat and unnecessary, and she's quickly exited from the show, and it's kind of gross in a very Fargo kind of way. So I have a lot of problems with season three, folks, and I was very sad to report that because Finders Keepers is a wonderful novel. It is my favorite out of the Bill Hodges trilogy. And if you're not interested in Mr. Mercedes at all, I would highly recommend novel number two, Finders Keepers. It's the strongest one. So my heart is a little smashed by the fact that it's the worst season of Mr. Mercedes. I'm very upset by that. So overall, to kind of diffuse and dilute and get us back to square one here, my recommendations to all of you is to check out seasons one and two of Mr. Mercedes. I really enjoyed them. The script was a lot better. The Brady Hartsfield, the actor they chose, Harry Chudaway, excellent job. It's graphic. It's yikes. It's in your face, but enjoyable. Really well done. Season three definitely fizzles for me. I did not like it. I have a lot of problems with it, and I would like to do a bit more research as to why they made these choices that they did. So if you are a fan of Finders Keepers, if you really enjoy that novel, I would say stay away from this. Stay away from season three. It's not worth your time. And I know that's a little bit bratty to say. It's a little bit of a not nice thing to say, but it was a little bit of a time waster for me. Of course, I wanted to see it through, but I was just shaking my head so many times. And I would only perk up a little bit when Bill Hodges was on screen, Holly Gibney, Jerome, when they were actually at the Finders Keepers building. That made me happy. That made me smile. But anytime it would go to the main plot point, such as Peter, Morris, stupid Alma, random victims of Alma's insanity, I was just like eye rolling. I don't know what the hell happened is how I feel. So all in all, not a fan of season three, but I did want to share my thoughts with all of you. I think I have some isolated Mr. Mercedes moments throughout the podcast. I do believe I was a fan of seasons one and two. I really did enjoy the depictions. I feel that they picked a wonderful Brady Hartsfield. I liked it. Seasons one and two were enjoyable. Season three, oh my gosh, no me gusta. So what do you guys think? Have you checked out Mr. Mercedes yet? Has anybody taken a gander? And have you watched all three seasons? Because I would love to hear your thoughts on season three, whether or not you have read Finders Keepers yet, or if you haven't. I am so open to all the things. So if you would like to write into the show, underratedsk@gmail.com, and let me know your thoughts on season three of Mr. Mercedes, I would love to hear whether or not we are on the same page, or if you feel that there might have been something I missed, or maybe there was some excellent parts that I could maybe give a second look. Although, I really don't ever want to see season three again. It really kind of disappointed me. It seems like there will be a season four, however, I hope there isn't. There's nothing more to say. Yes, they could make up some fictional content, content with these characters, but let's put it to bed. I think that the only thing that is left to be explored is, of course, the exiting of Bill Hodges. That's all I'm going to say about that without spoiling too much. But there's a reason why Holly Gibney is a solo act when we see her again in the 2018 novel The Outsider, as well as If It Bleeds, the 2020 novella collection, and this untitled Holly Gibney work. She is a solo detective at this point in time. She does have a little bit of help from Jerome and Barbara Anderson, as well as a couple other folks that we have met along the way. Ralph Anderson from The Outsider, who's I believe a retired police officer or detective, so she's making some friends along the way. But overall, check out Mr. Mercedes seasons 1 and 2. I'd love to know your thoughts, and let's skip season 3 and go straight to the novel, and let's read Finders Keepers. I think I will definitely make some room to talk about the novel a little bit later on in the show as we make our way through a couple other underrated King works that I'm dying to read. But as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, I am working on The Wastelands, so I'm returning to the Dark Tower. You should expect some thoughts on that here in the next few weeks. And hopefully before the year is out, I'm really itching to tackle Needful Things. I've never read it before. I really want to give it a go before the year is up. We'll see where we go. We'll see if we can make it happen. If not, it might be in the first of the new year. We shall see. But once more, thank you guys so much for listening. I know this is a little bit of an odd one. The TV episodes usually are. They're a little bit of a mixed bag, but thank you guys so much for hanging out. If you haven't already, and would love to be the best people ever, head over to Apple Podcasts and give the show a 5-star review. It would make us oh so happy, and put a little log on our shrinking campfire around this time of year. It's a little bit more of a challenge to stay on the horse. So any sort of encouragement or reviews is so appreciated. We thank you so much for hanging out with us. In time, we shall be chatting more about Roland and Eddie and Miss Susanna as we make our way across the wastelands. Thank you guys for hanging out wherever you are in the world. Take care, and I'll see you later.